You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Albert Mohler, Brian Wolfmiller, Hans Feeney, and Will Wheaton at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago.
I imagine that when 2020 is over and they pick the word of the year, it will be something like polarized. Talking about our politics, our society, our morality. And many people believe that at the center of that polarization, maybe indeed the cause of that polarization, is the president, President Donald Trump. Well, it's more complicated than that. And one of the groups that is polarized in this whole situation are religious conservatives. Some are all in for the president. Some were all out and are kind of in now. And there are many in the middle. Of course, the press won't tell you that. That'll simply tell you that 81% of American evangelicals voted for Trump, and that's all you need to know. Well, there's more that you need to know. Joining us to talk about religious conservative support for President Trump, Andrew Walker. He's Associate Professor of Christian Ethics at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and Executive Director of the Carl F. H. Henry Institute for Evangelical Engagement. He's authored a recent column for National Review Online titled "Understanding Why Religious Conservatives Would Vote for Trump." Andrew, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, it's good to be with you.
You write, between never Trump and always Trump, there is a third category, reluctant Trump. What do you mean by that?
Well, in my estimate, there is this constituency of voters who have a lot of concerns about the president's character and temperament and are not prepared to buy wholesale everything that the Trump phenomenon stands for, but are nonetheless still very vigilantly concerned about the direction of culture and the direction of policy. And quite simply, they see the Trump administration as less hostile to their values and their worldview than the Democratic alternative. And so this reluctant Trump constituency, they're less willing to make concessions and compromises and saying everything Trump does is fine, and more of an understanding that he's a flawed person and we live on a broken stage and we have limited options on whom to vote for. And so if we have to participate in a political sphere, we're going to participate in a way that produces outcomes that are less hostile to our interests. But more importantly, we don't want to just be self-interested, but understand that human flourishing is at stake. And so we want to vote for policies that we think accord with what is true of the world.
What is what you call the simple binary portrayal of religious conservatives that we often encounter in the media?
I think the media kind of chops the world of religious conservatives into you're either, you know, hardcore never Trump, which I'll admit I was more in the hardcore never Trump kind of framework in 2016 versus a kind of falling over yourself to endorse everything there is about Donald Trump, that you see him as the best president we've ever had. I mean, or seeing language attached to him, like he's the most pro-life president we've ever had. He's the most pro-religious liberty president we've ever had. So that the always Trump category falls into the worldview that says there's virtually nothing the president can do for us to lose our support for him because he's God's man and we're going to vote for him.
What do you make of the scolding religious conservatives who voted for Trump have taken from evangelicals recently, like Jonathan Merritt and Mark Galley?
Well, so that's the reason I really wrote my article, is because I think that there is this third reluctant Trump category that is disrespected, and they're lopped in with the more problematic elements of supporting the president. And I want to be very candid and intellectually honest. I do think that there is some problematic elements when you're imputing to President Trump these, you know, Christian powers of trying to take America back for God. I think that's problematic. But there's this other category that are fundamentally very decent people. They're not motivated day by day by politics, but they're being castigated by the media as sellouts to their Christian faith, that they're soulless hypocrites, and that they are always and forever going to give a defense and apologetic for President Trump.
How do you explain some religious conservative voters in their uncritical enthusiasm for the president?
I do think it's very problematic, and I think that's grounded in kind of a God and country type thesis that one has about America. And I think that is kind of wrapped up in both kind of a nationalistic and revivalistic fervor, and that it leads to kind of papering over the problems of someone like Donald Trump, or in its worst forms, it leads to waving them off and treating them like they're no problem at all. So going on Fox News and, again, becoming the president's talking head, so to speak, and as though you're trotted out to give a defense for the president when he's made a personal indiscretion or said something inflammatory. I think that's a problem. What we should be calling for is intellectual honesty, calling balls and strikes, applauding the president for his great policies, which I am more than willing to do, and acknowledging that Donald Trump is a man with a track record and a profile of relational damage in his wake that Christians cannot just endorse without having some serious misgivings.
I have observed that Christians have been comfortable with knowing that their presidents, almost to a man, but with a few notable exceptions, have a public face which is ordinarily very civil and polite and proper, whereas behind closed doors they might be, you know, as bad as Lyndon B. Johnson. But Trump has kind of reversed that, or maybe we could say he only has one face that he shows to everybody, including the public. How should religious conservatives react to the president's considerable public vices?
Well, I'm going to keep coming back to what I've been saying online, is we need to be willing to let our yes be yes and our no be no, and to call out the problems when we see the problems. The day after I published this article in National Review, the president retweeted an account from an account that was using horribly profane language. And we need to be able to be a people that say we can't be bought entirely by political power, even though we might find one side more favorable. We have to be a people who are guided by principle and morality and conviction, and not by proximity to power and allowing that to cloud our judgment.
You cite an example of your real life friend that you call Steve. Tell us about him.
Steve is a very close friend of mine, and as I said in the piece in National Review, he's a conservative Southern Baptist, attends a church here in Louisville, Kentucky, has two daughters, faithfully married, and is one of the greatest Christian role models I have in my life. And he voted for Trump in 2016 and is going to vote for Donald Trump in 2020. But Steve does not try to make Donald Trump something he is not. He does not think he's a role model for his daughters. He thinks that there have been far more moral presidents in the office of the presidency. But if he has to make a calculated decision on who to vote for my friend Steve, it's unmistakable that the policies of the Trump administration are far more preferable for him. And contrary to the stereotype that someone like Steve is a racist or is ignorant, Steve is an educated guy. He cares about racial diversity. This is someone who helped an Iraqi refugee family resettle in the town of Louisville, Kentucky. And so individuals like Steve, I think, tell a far more layered and nuanced and complex story behind what's going on in a lot of religious conservatives' viewpoints and how they vote. They're not bad people. They're fundamentally decent, and they're getting a bad rap from certain voices who want to stereotype and caricature all Trump voters as exactly the same.
You say that an event on October 10th, 2019 explains the odd couple relationship of religious conservatives and Donald Trump. What was that event?
Well, that was during a Democratic debate when then-candidate Beto O'Rourke very brazenly acknowledged that in his administration, he would be more than willing to remove the tax-exempt status of churches if they were not LGBT-affirming. And so, call it what you want, that is an exact example of the state coming after the church and punishing the church for the church not towing the line on a cultural issue. And so I cannot blame Christians for hearing something like that and then thinking, my goodness, the government is wanting to actively stigmatize, if not punish, Christian churches for believing things that Christian churches have believed for 2,000 years. And so it's not really a lot of hard calculus to be done to recognize you're probably going to vote for the person who is less hostile to your deepest seated convictions that you have. And so, of course, Beto O'Rourke is no longer a presidential candidate, which I'm very thankful for. But those types of moments have the ability to kind of move the needle as far as what's kind of acceptable in public discourse. And I think that it's likely those types of calls will now be made again in the future because they've made once prior. And so I think that awakened people's eyes to the stakes of what's going on at the policy level. And that night I tweeted from my account that, you know, I know tons and tons of people who they are not really proud of necessarily voting for Donald Trump, and they have no interest in defending Donald Trump at his worst. But they also can't go along with supporting a party that is actively targeting their faith and trying to stigmatize it.
We're talking about religious conservative support for President Trump with Andrew Walker of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Coming up next, generally speaking, where do most criticisms of how religious conservatives understand the world miss the mark?
You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Albert Moeller, Brian Wolfmiller, Hans Feeney, and Will Whedon at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
We're discussing Andrew Walker's column for National Review Online, Understanding Why Religious Conservatives Would Vote for Trump. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Albert Moeller on secularism, Christian political engagement with Mark and Molly Hemingway, and Dr. Robert George on the U.S. Constitution and civic virtue. These are some of the speakers and topics for the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. Early bird registration is $135, and that includes three meals. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org. The 2020 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Andrew, generally speaking, where do most criticisms of how religious conservatives understand the world miss the mark?
I think what is commonly thought about with religious conservatives in the media is that they are monocausal in why they vote, that they only vote for one reason, and that's on the basis of self-interest. I think that they fail to appreciate this fervent commitment that religious conservatives have to morality, to decency, that they want to reduce it down, as one book does, to nostalgia, fear, and a lust for power. If you talk to most religious conservatives, that's not what describes them. What describes them is a care for a just society that treats people fairly. And I think an issue that is directly at the tip of the spear on an issue like this is abortion. Is if we can't have parties that are both unanimously on the same page on an issue like abortion, it's not a surprise that religious conservatives are going to be gravitating to one party, not necessarily maybe buying everything the party has to say, but at least gravitating in the aggregate to a party that is not standing for the targeted extermination of a defenseless class of human beings. So this is a matter of, do the critics of religious conservatives understand the metaphysical worldview that religious conservatives live with? And I think they either do not, or they are unwilling to learn. And so I think there's also a question of, how many religious conservatives do you know? That's what I would want to ask a lot of critics of religious conservatives.
Is there anyone in the current list of Democratic candidates for president that can credibly appeal to religious conservatives who are reluctant Trump voters?
I don't believe so. I think the Democratic Party is so wedded to the most extreme abortion policies. I say this not trying to baptize the Republican Party's platform as the Christian platform, but if I'm evaluating the two at the level of moral principle, one party in particular has a fervent commitment to absolute evil and sin. And that's one party in particular, the Democratic Party. And so when you have a list of candidates, like we do now on the Democratic side, who say that there's no room for pro-life Democrats, I think that it's not a shock that Christians who believe life is precious and all people are made in the image of God and babies deserve to live, I don't think it's a shock that they're fleeing that particular party.
Why do you call abortion a morally unambiguous issue?
It's morally unambiguous because it's the most vivid, visceral demonstration of a violation of the Sixth Commandment. The Sixth Commandment is, thou shalt not murder. And abortion is murder. I know that's controversial to say, but it is the taking of innocent life, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts or moral qualifications to make around it. And Christians cannot support the targeted extermination of an unborn class of persons. It's out of alignment with Scripture, and it's out of alignment with church history and what the church has stood for when it comes to human dignity. And so we need to call a spade and acknowledge abortion for what it is. It's America's Holocaust. It ought to be undone, and we ought to have a system where all children are given an equal opportunity at life.
You quote from a regular guest on this program in Princeton, Professor Robert George, saying that support for Trump is, quote, based on a prudential judgment that the overall situation for the common good would be made much worse if he were to lose to one of the Democrats, and they fear, that is Trump supporters, with justification, that the consequences for themselves and the religious institutions would be dire if such a thing were to happen. Why is that so important?
It's important because when we enter into a conversation like politics, we have to understand that we're living in a society that is imperfect and flawed, and it can never attain paradise or perfection, which means we have to make prudential decisions and trade-offs about whose platform and which candidate is going to produce outcomes that are better for the common good. And this is where we have to enter into what's called political realism. We don't operate in a world of ideals. The Christian moral tradition operates on the basis of moral ideals, and there are black and white moral absolutes. But the world that we operate in, as far as how people aggregate themselves in different communities and political power, sometimes we are not offered the ability to achieve zero-sum outcomes. And so we have to figure out what is the best way to incrementally gain systems that are more just and more humane and better for the common good.
I'm fascinated by something that you wrote where you said that many religious conservatives are stuck between the tensions of embarrassment when the president's petulant rage is on full 280-character display and relief when they see a policy action or personnel decision that they prefer. You say, in this regard, religious conservatives show the best and worst about American politics. How so?
Because we have to deal with the circumstances that have been given to us. It's hard to create new ideal circumstances on our own terms. And what I meant in particular is, I am a political conservative. I'm a theological conservative. I have a lot of friends working in the Trump administration, and I prefer the policies coming out of administration vastly over any of the policies that would come out of a Democratic alternative. So there's personnel issues that I prefer. There's policy issues I prefer. And then I have to offset that with the reality that Donald Trump, at the level of his persona and his character, is often indefensible. He lies very frequently. He acts very, very impulsively. He verbally abuses people. He's often very insensitive to various classes of persons. And we need to call that out and say that's not in keeping with a true Christian human dignity ethic. And so there are times where you want to roll your eyes and shrug and just say, President Trump, please close your mouth. Please stop tweeting. I think he would do himself a great electoral fortune if he actually just talked and tweeted less. And so religious conservatives find themselves in that uncomfortable tension of they're embarrassed when he demonstrates the very worst of his personality. At the same time, they recognize that the office of the presidency is often bigger than one man, and there are policy outcomes and personnel outcomes that are very favorable.
Why do you say that those who hope to sway voters away from Trump through endless berating think pieces will fail?
Well, because you're not going to convince people that they need to change their minds by condescending to them and making fun of them and thinking that they're idiots. I'm reminded of this CNN news clip that went viral with Don Lemon and Rick Wilson referring to Trump voters as though they were cultural morons, that they were ignorant and uneducated. That is not how you persuade people. There's no sense of empathy in moments like that. How you persuade people is learning how they think, and then gently challenging people in how they think. And so I notice more often than not, opposition to Trump voters comes in the form of condescension rather than persuasion.
What is the downside, if any, of this pragmatic compromise on the part of religious conservatives when it comes to their Trump votes?
The downside is we have to continue defending the president or be seen as defending the president when he acts indefensibly. And this is why I don't want to be lopped in as fervently committed to Donald Trump. I think we as Christians need to be able to have a little bit of distance from political power so that we can be prophetic. And so I think that the situation that even reluctant Trump voters find themselves in is that they're going to be painted as always and forever defending Donald Trump, when they have probably very little interest in defending Donald Trump's personality and his persona, but they are interested in defending the policies that come out of the administration.
Finally, you say there must be an Augustinian account that takes stock of politics in a fallen age. Moral and political realism has been in short order, and now is the time for its rebirth. What do you mean by that?
So I'm referring back to St. Augustine, one of the most profound Christian voices in the history of Christendom, who understood that the city of God lives amidst the city of man. And while we're a contrast society and distinct and understand ourselves as distinct from the world, we're still called to live amidst a world. And that's a world that is on a broken stage. And while we believe in a moral universe of black and white, the world that we live in often only allows us to achieve outcomes in the color of gray. So while we're working to achieve those ideals, we have to work within the system we've been given, because we live in a world where there's brokenness and sin, and that applies to systems as well, not just as persons. And so we have to work with the system we've been given. In short, we just have to work with the world on the terms that we find the world operating in. That means at times we're going to have to push back against what the world is saying. It means sometimes we're going to go in the direction of what the world is saying if it's in a positive direction. But fundamentally, it means that we have to work incrementally, that while we believe in a world of moral absolutes, getting to those moral absolutes may take time and may take some trade-offs. And so that's what we mean by Augustinian realism and political realism, realizing that idealism and utopia is not an accurate description of the world as it currently is.
Andrew Walker is Associate Professor of Christian Ethics at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and Executive Director of the Carl F. H. Henry Institute for Evangelical Engagement. He's author of a recent column for National Review titled "Understanding Why Religious Conservatives Would Vote for Trump." You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Andrew, thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Joy Pullman about an attempt to revive the Equal Rights Amendment in the U.S. House. We'll respond to your email and the Issues Etc. comment line and its media coverage of religion with Terry Mattingly. On Thursday, we'll discuss the Academy Award winners and the losers with Pastor Ted Geese. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Give your spouse the gift of time for Valentine's Day with a gift certificate from The Cleaning Authority. Call toll-free 1-866-827-0062 or visit thecleaningauthority.com. Forget the flowers, candy, and jewelry this year with a Valentine's Day gift certificate from our favorite cleaning service, The Cleaning Authority, 866-827-0062 or thecleaningauthority.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.